Welcome back for another episode of the Beyond Body podcast. I'm your host, Mia Findlay, an eating disorder survivor, advocate, and recovery coach. And this podcast is all about motivating, inspiring, and most importantly, getting real about mental health. As always, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which I am seated and recording today, the Gadigal people. I send my respect to all elders and ancestors and any First Nations people listening.
Welcome back to another Beyond Body podcast.
Yes.
I am one of your co-hosts, Holly Sunday, and here with the delightful Mia Findlay. We are hoping to bring you yet another memorable, if not at least useful, conversation. We'll settle for useful for sure.
Let's start small and then we'll just commit to like the next layer of descriptor as we go. If you can't already tell, we did start the episode a bit giggly. Because, yeah, maybe some of the off-camera stuff will, you know, we'll put together like a blooper reel towards the end of the year.
For sure. It's probably good to start this conversation giggly because it's not that much of a giggly topic we're talking about today.
Yeah, it's not really like loose and relaxed, the topic that we've picked.
It's which literally the opposite of that.
Yeah, totally. So in terms of the topic that we're discussing today, it's whether or not you can ever truly be in control when you have an eating disorder and whether or not your eating disorder is truly giving you the tools for control. And the reason why this one is so relevant is because I'm sure that you've come across this in client work. When we're first doing what I call the blueprint phase in client work, where we're unpacking people's history, and then we go on to unpack the functions of their eating disorder, what they feel their eating disorder is currently trying to do for them, control comes up 90% of the time. Do you find that with clients when you're going through that blueprint phase?
Yeah, control, I feel like, is the most overused word in recovery coaching. And I think if we're talking about eating disorders specifically and how control fits into that, I think the first thing that a lot of people probably think is the obvious expression of control, which would be through food and body. But I do see those elements as sort of just being the very surface level expression of this desire to control, but it may be the most obvious way that control is understood in the context of eating disorders, but absolutely not limited to that. I very much see being in control in your eating disorder as this giving away of power. So I think when suffering with an eating disorder, it is so super common to put emphasis and control on external factors, giving that sense of, I guess, a bit of a sense of like reliance and regulation and safety. And these can be things like the obvious of, you know, body parts, but also others' opinions or food, or even an attempt to control the outcomes or the timelines of our life. Mm-hmm. I think this passing of power, how I see it, is what it is doing is ever so slowly creating this distrust within yourself to actually be able to offer yourself a sense of comfort, ease, safety, whatever it might be, without a reliance on those external things having to facilitate that for you. And obviously, this is a problem because there is truly no absolute assurance that any external things are going to be able to offer you what you may so badly desire. And that's kind of the allure of eating disorders. It's like the thing that I feel a lot of people like are drawn to is this perceived control of being like, oh, maybe I can control these things in my life if I just have this thing that's going to show me how to do it. Mm. Welcome to having an eating disorder and then recovery.
Completely. I mean, I think that my greatest sort of expression of control was exactly what you're talking about. It was over rules and body. And again, I'm talking from the mindset of when I had my eating disorder. I'm not convinced that that was really control now, because my lesson growing up in terms of how my body sort of I was bullied a lot as a child because of my body. And so I didn't have control over how I was treated. I didn't have control over how people perceived me. I didn't have control over how I felt about myself as a result of those things, especially as a child and a teenager, where, you know, those things are really informing your sense of self. You don't already have a structured sort of sense of self. It's really you're just a little sponge taking in data, and all the data was telling me my body was wrong and that I deserved to be mistreated and I deserved to be judged and I deserved to be called these horrible names. And then in my teens, I went through a period of weight loss and people were nicer to me. Shocker. And so the way that I internalized that was, oh, I do have control over how people treat me, and it's dependent on what I allow my body to do or not do. And that was so comforting. That was amazing because it gave me an answer to something that was so incredibly painful and felt so out of my control for so long. And then obviously all the dynamics start to come in where you then realize, oh, there's like numbers that I can control. There's input and output that I can control. There's exercise that I can control. So these things, like you said, they look surface to people who don't understand eating disorders. Like, oh, you know, people with eating disorders are so controlling and they, you know, it's just about the food and it's about calories and it's about this and it's about that. That's more of the representation of something probably a lot deeper that they're trying to control, whether or not that's a traumatic experience in their childhood or at any point in their life, or it's how they've been treated, or it's, you know, some connection that's been made between this internal, deeply psychological experience and then these surface variables that we feel like we can play around with to then make those internal things feel like they're in control. Do you think that was a bit of what was at play with your eating disorder?
Yeah, I resonate and agree with so much of that. I think when I reflect on my own experience, I absolutely used food as a way to control my body, yes. But what I didn't realize at the time, as all these things are, so often these things are in hindsight, was that well before that, maybe like 10 plus years in childhood, I was actually already using food as a method of control, but it wasn't to control my body. It was very much to control and actually repress my emotions. It was how I soothed and how I coped with my emotions because I didn't yet have the skills to be able to express them in a healthy way. And I didn't learn those skills. It wasn't until I went through years of, you know, recovery and self-work and therapy that I started to piece together. And this stuff started to make a whole lot more sense to me. And I could see the different ways that I attempted to control through food as a way to change my current reality. That reality being these emotions that I thought I couldn't hold or a body that I thought I couldn't tolerate. Because I think I find it frustrating. It's a really common thing that anyone in recovery would experience, being like, oh, eating disorders are just about control. Like, just eat the food. It's like, oh, spare me. Don't know what you're talking about.
So just eat a burger rhetoric.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think, and then if we kind of like pull diet culture into it, despite what diet culture attempts to get you to believe, sanity around food does not come from controlling the food. It actually comes from letting go and accepting the fact that the more you try to control your food and be in control, the more out of control you are going to be. So I really think that being in control in an eating disorder is actually more like being controlled.
Yes. And, you know, you just helped a light bulb go off in my head because I mentioned this in the video that I put out on Monday about the fact that I grew up with a pretty abusive stepfather. And one of the ways that he exerted control was through food. So we weren't allowed to, you couldn't even go to the fridge and like get leftovers without asking for permission. Right. We're probably told no. There was food hidden from us. If we took it, we were like severely punished. It was really, really, really punitive. Yeah. And so my reaction was to then secretly go and buy food or steal food or whatever. And that then started to contribute to this total, I think it was in part rebellion, and I'm very proud of like 10-year-old Mia for rebelling in that way. But 100%. Then it started to represent like, well, I need to have some control over my relationship with food because that's being taken out of my hands. And just like what you're talking about, that then just led to this totally out of control relationship with food because I didn't know how to regulate that. This whole, you know, giving yourself permission and listening to your instincts. I never had that. I never had that as a child. I was never given kind of the landscape to be able to be curious and play around with that stuff. So I lived in sort of that overcorrecting pendulum swing that we talk about, right? The extreme of restriction or whatever it might be, which then inevitably swings to the overcorrection of binging, and we're always trying to get it back into a neutral spot. I think that if people really were curious and explored, when did this stuff actually start happening? They might find that it is sooner than like day dot of diagnosis starting, because that's why I love to do the first session or two with clients where we're doing the full history intake. And the history is about your relationship with body and relationship with food. And they're so surprised when I'm like, what was food like around your dinner table at home? Mm. What food was in the pantry? What labels were given? And they're like, that's the first time I've ever been asked that. I've been asked about like from when my eating disorder started, and it's like these root systems are growing from a much earlier point than we're probably even aware of, where our ability to regulate and ability to sort of determine our own relationship with food hasn't necessarily, that healthy control hasn't been handed over to us at any point.
Yeah, I also think that's one of the really just cool things about recovery is that you get to learn so much about why you are the way you are, and like why we believe the things we believe, and why we're showing up in some of these ways. And a lot of it is from conditioning, a lot of it is from nature, and then a lot of those things are like how those things have intertwined in our environment.
Yeah.
But I think sort of for most people, this is the experience for most people, and it wouldn't, this is also isn't, this conversation about control is also going to be so useful for people in other areas that maybe is not specifically eating disorder, because I think control shows up in so many people's lives in so many different ways. But I think if a person is experiencing emotional distress or just really just any feelings that feel like they're difficult to face, like you were describing, you know, when you were bullied as a younger child, and then controlling food and eating behaviors did actually offer you a way of coping through feeling like you just generally like can show up and like yourself a little bit more. And maybe it is creating that sense of stability, or also maybe, which was definitely more so for my experience, was like it supported me sort of having this avoidance or escapism, because I had this preoccupation of these areas. And I think in those moments, particularly before an eating disorder is completely developed, it's really difficult for the person who is using these disordered behaviors to possibly understand the consequences of what this short-term emotional management through controlling food can actually have. Because in that moment, particularly when you're a younger kid, you just want the pain to go away and nothing else really matters.
I totally agree with you. And I think there's a good caveat to throw in there, which is that, you know, sometimes these things show up because nothing else does. Like when I was a kid, the fact that I could find these little outlets of self-soothing and some kind of control over my own life in a very out of control household, I don't begrudge that younger version of myself, just because it contributed so much to probably where I ended up. I'm like, she did the best she could with what she had, you know? Yeah. Yeah. So these things very often come along and carry us to, hopefully carry us to a point where something more adaptive and more healthy can come in. But it's certainly not our aim to shame these younger versions of ourselves or anyone else for just trying to cope.
Absolutely. And I think looking at some of these experiences and our past experiences is really this opportunity to practice that self-compassion for our younger selves. Because like you were honestly, we were all just doing the best we could with what we were given, particularly as this younger child. Like, I don't know anyone who is born with this really strong like sense of self and just knows what is right for them and their relationship with food and how these things are going to like turn in like future events in your life. Mm-hmm. We all have to navigate this stuff, and it's tricky and it's confusing, but it is also very, very necessary. And recovery is really the system in which you get to look at your relationship with food and control and other people and self, and then figure out, okay, this is why I've been showing up for this, these seasons of my life. How do I want to show up from here moving forwards?
Yeah, totally. How do you define being in control now, given eating disorder was very much about like that external control and sort of all the calculations? And I love that you also add in there that that's actually showing a total distrust of self, that we have to like play with all these calculations and be monitoring our body because we don't trust our body and we don't trust ourselves to emotionally regulate. So what does that definition of sort of being in control mean to your healthy self versus what it means to your eating disorder self?
I think there are a few key lessons that I very much have learned from control. And I think one of them, if we're just first of all talking about that kind of disconnection there, is that
I think if we talk about control specifically in the experience of attempting body control, I see it as being this like straight up experience of disembodiment, because when you are experiencing messages from the body, and it can be as simple as hunger and fullness, and ignoring them or trying to override the language of the body with the product of the mind, i.e. your eating disorder, it creates this separation between mind and body. And I would describe that as complete disembodiment. And I see one of the greatest experiences offered by the work of recovery is to come to understand your body as an integrated aspect of self and not as an object to control. And through doing this, you get to learn that the body is not your enemy. And like we were saying before, you know, as children, we were just always doing the best we could with what we were given. I also very much believe that your body is always doing the best it can with what it is given. And I see the opposite of control in terms of the body sense is trust. And I don't think that you can trust and control at once. And this is obviously not exclusive to bodies and eating disorders. I think this trust versus control conversation plays out in endless avenues of life. And I also sort of have come to understand through my own experience that I was very much only controlling what I did not trust. And I think experiencing deep levels of distrust that likely do come from past experiences is so valid and it's so common, but attempting to control aspects of your life from a place of fear is not going to be the long-term solution. And I think a lot of this work starts with awareness and really asking yourself some of these really big questions, like, what are the ways that I am actually currently in relationship with my body? Like, is it through these dynamics of control and coercion and force? And really trying to figure out, if I was in a relationship with trust in my body, how would I act then? Like, what would that actually look like? How would I be able to show up differently? I think it starts with just listening to the language of the body, which, you know, the body speaks through pain and symptoms, and then learning to very slowly respond with kindness, not control. And that does just start with simple things like hunger, fullness, and tiredness. So I think that has been a huge part of how I understand being in control. Well, I guess I kind of have navigated control in my current life now. Have you had that experience of sort of feeling completely disembodied because you were trying to control so much?
Totally. I always, when this comes up with clients, I always ask them, does it feel like you kind of live in a floating head? Like, yeah. There's a disconnect, like from the neck down, there's just a total separation, that it feels like those two things aren't aligned or communicating with each other. And movement is one of the ways that I get them to figure out whether or not there is like this separation happening, or whether or not it's more of a joint experience. Because when we look at how people engage with movement and they're trying to control their body, or they're trying to control their relationship with exercise by like having this certain amount of exercise they do, and they do a certain pace and they go for a certain amount of time, not checking in whether or not the body wants to do that or is even equipped to do that or might be injured or in pain. Versus when you go for a great hike or something with your girlfriends, or you leave like a great yoga class, and the feeling is not, oh, I really pushed myself and I thrashed myself. It's like this aligned, fully in your body, calm, soothed, relaxed feeling, which is honoring what the body's limits were, and not pushing, but just doing it from a place of enjoyment and a place of, sort of healing, or whatever sort of the intention is going into it, or connection, going, you know, and doing something with a group of people or friends or whatever. That's how I always felt with movement in my eating disorder. Was I was not even aware of what my body was experiencing, and I would end up with injuries that wouldn't heal, and I didn't understand that. And it was because my body was sending me all these signals, and I just couldn't hear the doorbell ringing. Like, I just could not hear it banging on the door going, give it a rest. Like, we're not actually physically going to be able to do this at some point, because we're going to be too injured to be able to move. Like, you need to stop, right? As opposed to checking in with your body and going, is this something my body feels like it needs today? And if the answer is no, if it's more that I need rest or some gentle stretching at an absolute push, then that's what we do, right? Even if my mind is like, I would like to go for a walk, if my body's like, I'm tired, then we're not going.
Totally. And I think that learning to develop that little bit of trust, yes, you have to develop a new relationship with trust with your body, but also that can start with where else can you find trust, like with your team, with this process, with your external world, like who else is there that you can start to develop this trust in other areas as well? Because learning to trust, not control in one area is going to complement learning to trust and not control in other areas. And I think also what you're saying there, if we kind of have these two categories, then we've got like control over here and the eating disorder, and then this sort of like more this experience of embodiment that very much includes like connection and intuition. Mm-hmm. Because I think controlling and the way it presents in eating disorders lacks intuition, it lacks connection, and it lacks flexibility. And I think a super, super easy example that I was exploring with a client earlier in the week was like a client was going out for lunch with a friend, and before even seeing the meal that she had ordered, it was like some sandwich, decided mentally, eating disorder has decided, as a way to control, I'm going to eat half of it and I'm going to take half of it home. Yeah. So you can see how the eating disorder is in control here, because it created no space to be intuitive. It created no space to actually be able to have the opportunity connect in with what is my body telling me? Can I connect in with fullness? Can I connect in with hunger? And then can I connect in with any emotions that might come up here? Because maybe this is a fear food for me. So it's sort of like, we're not only silencing the communication of the body, but you're also sort of creating this roadblock with all these opportunities for you to be able to challenge the emotions that are coming up when you stop controlling. And that is really, really important work. And that's also the really, really hard work.
Yes. And that false sense of control, yes, sort of what you're talking about with that client in terms of like the eating disorder gets to decide what you're going to have before we even know what you need. I will often explain it to clients where they're like, but you know, Mia, like, how do I trust that my body is asking for more food than it asked for yesterday? Like, I don't understand why that's happening. It's like, we don't need to understand. Like, the body knows how to do that. You don't need to rationalize every choice. I explain it sort of like as if you're an Uber driver and you start your day off every day, but you will only let yourself put a quarter of a tank of petrol in the car, right? Yeah. But you don't know how many jobs you're going to get that day. And you don't know how far those people are going to need to drive. Or you could, you know, the day that a quarter of a tank worked, you might have only got two jobs. Now you might get 20, and they might be airport trips and you're doing a lot of driving. So you might feel more in control when you're just putting that quarter of a tank in. How in control are you going to feel when you're broken down on the side of the road with a passenger in the back seat going, what happened? And you go, oh, well, I only put a quarter of a tank of petrol in every day. So at some point, when you are handing control over to eating disorder and getting that comfort from that predictability of how it behaves, you're going to pay for it at some point where your life is completely out of control or your mind is out of control. Because that was my experience, was the more in control my eating disorder was over my eating, my movement, my body, the more out of control of my mind I felt. So when I went to recovery, I realized I had to flip it. I had to get back in healthy control of my mind. And that meant letting go of the control of the food and the body, et cetera, because one is sustainable and one is not. Being more in control of how your mind operates and how it speaks to you and the thoughts that you let just run rampant, or, you know, the feelings that go unsoothed or the stuff that goes unpacked, that has way bigger, more damaging consequences than if you learn to be more intuitive and more trusting of the sort of physical processes that over many, many, many years of evolution, the body has figured out how to operate, right? So that control, that healthy control of how I spoke to myself, how I took care of my mental health, how I, you know, took care of my boundaries in my relationships, et cetera, that became the definition of being in healthy control. And I realized not only is it the better choice, it isn't really a choice, because the other one, you were never truly in control. As you said, you handed the control over. Whereas when you are more in the driver's seat of your own mind, that's the greatest sense of I've got this than I've ever felt. I never felt a sense of I've got this. I always felt like I'm about to fuck it up. I'm about to lose control. I'm about to go off the edge. Like, I, you know, never felt a sense of I'm right where I'm meant to be, doing what I'm meant to be doing. And I feel so serene and at peace with myself ever.
I agree with that so much. I think that being in control to me now very much looks like being able to manage my emotional experience. And that, like you were saying, it looks like letting go of things I can't control and leaning into controlling parts of my life that are expansive, not contractive. And that looks like commitments to self-care and having this level of tender discipline. Yeah. And finding time for things that really fill my heart. And like, for example, like having work-life balance and committing to that and things like self-development or getting outdoors often and prioritizing that. And when I really took inventory of how control was showing up in my life and who was actually in control, you realize, and it's a bit of a slap in the face, I never had control. It was all a facade. I sure as hell had anxiety and I definitely had an eating disorder, but it was not control.
Mm-mm. No. And I think that that is one of the hardest things for clients to reckon with. I know that it was for me.
Because
what, and this is why I like to do a reframe where I'm like, was it control or was it predictability? Because when you think about what that decision-making process is like with an eating disorder, the decision has been made for you. Right. And one of the best ways that Carolyn demonstrates this is, you know, when you, because we obviously do the traffic light fear foods with people, their red foods are their really big fear foods, like high anxiety, orange and mid-range anxiety. And then there's their green foods. And we do that in that blueprint process at the beginning of working together, is to pick one of their fear foods and say, if I were to put that in front of you right now and say, like, and I was having one too, and say, you know, can you have that? Very often the answer is going to be no. And it's quick. They're like, no, I couldn't. Where's the decision-making process, right? Like that has already been pre-planned or it's kind of like you're a mouse in a maze and there's only one in and one destination. You don't have multiple options to choose from. You've got one option, which is no, I can't have that. Or no, that breaks the rule, as opposed to multiple options put in front of you. And then you intuitively going, do I want this? Will I enjoy it? Is this something which is my preference? Is this the time that I want it? These are all things that contribute to you actually being in the driver's seat versus here's the rules and the rigidities and the punishments that precede it getting to the point where you're able to make a choice, right? That choice has already been made for you. So is it really the comfort of being in control, or is it the comfort of being controlled, of being given this set of rigidities, which mean that you can't really make a wrong or bad choice because the choice is one. It is, you know, not door one, two, or three. It's door one, one, or one.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's having to reckon with the fact that part of it has been the comfort and soothing that you've got from something that is predictable. You know what your rules are going to be every day. You know what your intake's pretty much going to be. And even if behaviors pop up, you kind of know what that pattern's going to look like. You know what your self-talk is going to be. So even if it's abusive and it's awful, it's predictable. And the world is unpredictable. People are unpredictable. Maybe experiences from your past have been defined by unpredictability and in a very, very negative way. So this might be negative, but at least it's a certainty. At least you know what it looks like.
Yes. So
I think sometimes that can help people to just give it language, which is a little bit more reflective of what was actually going on versus like, I'm losing control. You never had it. You were looking for predictability, and we can give you predictability. We can, you know, make sure that you have that, but you don't just have to get it through this avenue. You can have predictability and comfort and soothing without all the terrible consequences.
Yeah. And I think this idea of predictability, it's such a important thing to really further explore, because the reality is life is unpredictable. And the answer is not to try to control what you think you can, because we literally cannot control the world. Like, that is just the law of change. It is the nature of all things. And the reality of life is that, you know, bad things and really hard things are going to happen to everyone, and beautiful things are going to happen to everyone. And we can't stop that. But we can choose if we allow past hurts to continue to play out in our present day experiences every single day for the rest of our very short, precious lives. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where that shift happens from being controlled by the eating disorder to taking back control of your own life, which looks like taking responsibility for your own healing, this personal power. This is taking back of control and knowing that something you can control is how you respond to the events of your life. And what you were saying there as well, which I think is so true, it's like that being able to do that, I think, can evoke so much fear in people, because there is a comfort with something else kind of giving you the predictability. Oh, but this is just what I do every day, and it feels like it keeps me safe in this life. But realistically, do you want to be comfortable or do you want to be happy? Right? It's like, we, to do this work, you need to be okay that at multiple times in your life, you're going to have to feel the spectrum of emotions. And when control is there, you're kind of like shooting yourself in the foot before you even get to try. You're not giving yourself this level of being like, you know what? This is going to be really hard. And I'm going to feel some really big emotions, but I have to do this to get to the other side and know that the emotion is going to pass and I can gain a little bit more trust every single time. Yeah. And that does come from putting yourself in a place where there is just, and you can practice, literally, you would have 500 opportunities every single day to practice this little increased level of flexibility here and there. And maybe that is something like, okay, someone else is making you a meal and you don't necessarily know the ingredients with it. Just literally saying to yourself, okay, I'm okay. Or maybe it is, you're not hungry at all and you have no appetite because like you've had a cold, you have to eat anyway. Okay, I am okay. And just, and challenging these things on the smallest scale is always going to be so useful for you just getting a little bit more comfortable stepping out of the very small, tight container that is control of an eating disorder.
Yeah. And even if you're not okay, having the control over how do you utilize things like help seeking? How do you utilize things like distraction? I posted in our team Facebook group, I think it was yesterday, this thing that I'm doing with a client that I do quite often, where we're trying to figure out how much of her eating disorder self is informing her food choices. So there's a few nut bars that she likes, but she can't tell whether or not she actually gravitates towards one more because eating disorder is like driving that choice. So we poured them all into a box that she can't see into and spent the week just putting a hand in, and whichever one she pulled out, that's what she had. And we're paying attention to, because this is the real control you have, is not over the nut bar and the body. It's what was my emotional response? Was she disappointed in like a healthy self way of like, oh, I'd actually prefer the other one, but I can have this and move on? Or was it high anxiety and like, this is wrong and XYZ is going to happen? So again, it's the internal stuff that we have control over, that then if she is noticing, oh yeah, I'm really struggling with having this nut bar because eating just sort of self's chattering away, I can reach out to Mia. I can do it with my partner because I know that that's helpful when I do those challenges with him. I can do a dialogue. I can sit at my distraction station that we set up where she's got a puzzle on there and she's got like crocheting stuff on there so she can sit and sort of ride out those emotions. That's where her control comes in, not which bar she's going to choose. It's because it's sort of the perfect microcosm of what you're talking about, which is life is going to happen. Things are going to pop up that you have no control over. I learned that in some of the hardest ways after I recovered, with people who passed away, people who got sick, bushfires, like things you truly have absolutely no control over, and surrendering to that. And then knowing that the only thing that I could have any ownership over was how was I going to take care of myself through all of that, so that when I came out the other side, I was as intact as I could be for when life picked up and became wonderful again, right? So we're not giving up any control. We are finding areas and pockets where we can have control. And even then within that, being flexible, right? That we don't then go to, because I think sometimes people get frustrated with recovery because they're like, but Mia, like, I just want to know that I have these certain things that I'm following. And I always do flexible goals with people. I give them a range. It's, you know, not knife's edge kind of goal setting that we're doing. And I'm like, but this is the point, is that you can't live your life living on a knife's edge, or otherwise you're not in control. You're not making choices. You're just trying to avoid, you know, you're trying to take the path of least resistance. Being able to show them that this internal taking care of yourself, how you manage your relationships, how you help seek, how you self-soothe, that's it. Sorry, everyone. Yeah. That's it. That's about the extent
the end of the podcast
of control you've got, which I always try to word that as carefully as I can, but like, that's the truth. That's the extent and breadth of your control.
Yeah. And I think so much stuff is happening simultaneously as you're kind of relinquishing some of this control. You're very much working on your relationship with change mm-hmm. as well. Because I think if we kind of come back to this idea of control being an attempt to manage emotions, particularly anxiety, if anxiety stems from this like future orientated fear, and then control steps in as this way to manage it, it kind of implies that change is bad and it's something to be avoided or managed. Mm-hmm. And then I think this idea, I guess, like having an attachment to control essentially kind of comes from having a bad relationship with change. So, which I very much know was absolutely my experience. I didn't want things to change, and particularly probably coming from earlier experiences where things did change and it did feel out of my control. Of course, control was going to be like, cool, this is our new skill. This is what we do to try and manage those things. But like we were saying before, you literally can't stop time. Like all these things are going to happen and everything is always flowing and evolving and changing. If we talk about that knife's edge, it doesn't really feel like it's very flowy. Like it feels incredibly stagnant, which is also similar qualities to the idea of perfectionism. I feel like I know where I'm going with this tangent. Just bear with me. I think these experiences, including like emotions and experiences, everything is always in motion, which of course brings up this idea of perfectionism because that is so stagnant, right? Like it's like everything has to be achieved in this way and then it doesn't change or I'm not going to be perfect anymore. But in reality, life is always moving. It's kind of like perfectionistic nature is very much this super like stuck, stagnant rock that is not moving. And life is like a flowing river or a crashing wave. So it's like you can either try to avoid the nature of everything changing and getting a little and avoiding getting comfortable with the idea of change, or you just have to learn to embrace it. Because the thing is, it's happening anyway, whether or not you decide it's going to happen.
That brings up such a funny memory because I think that's so true. I think that we can see signs early on in our life if we really look back as to why this sense of control is so important to us. Because whenever, like I remember my mum was selling our hall stand, this big like wooden hall stand, and I tied myself to it. And then she tried and she sold it. And then she tried to sell our dining room table and I did the same thing. Like I got my skipping rope and tie myself to it. Like, what a weirdo. I didn't have any, like, it was a hall stand. It had just been in my life my whole, you know, at that point, 10 years. And I didn't want it to go away. It had never served any functional purpose in my life. I wasn't hanging hats or coats on it, right? But it was just the idea that it was going to go away. And then through the tying myself to the dining room table, we did keep the dining room table. So I feel like that was
gave you evidence.
My advocacy started very young.
I love the drama of this being like, I'm getting my skipping rope.
A hot pink skipping rope and padlocks. I don't like the padlocks didn't connect to anything. I just like put padlocks on the skipping rope for effect.
Kids crack me up, hey. And it's probably like, imagine if your mom just sold the stand, the whole stand, and you didn't, like, you probably may have not have even realized. I mean, my sister is so like that. My mom will like not tell her if she's like doing a bit of a house cult. Like my sister and I do not live at home. Like you haven't lived in that bedroom for about 10 years, Liv. And then mum will come home, Liv will come home, mum will be like, oh, like I sold this or did this. And Liv's like, no, not my Tamagotchi. I'm like, you're literally 25, get over it.
Probably don't even like make the right batteries for it anymore.
These things start really young.
So there's so many clues and patterns that, you know, back, we can really see it. So what are some warning signs we can share with people that eating disorder self is in control, sort of like that predetermined stuff that we were talking about versus what healthy self control looks like?
Yep. So I feel like a few of the big red flaggers that the eating disorder is in control rather than the healthy self is definitely this lack of flexibility or even like increased irritability and anxiety when small occurrences happen or things don't work out the exact way that you assumed or had planned for them to happen. Another sign of this, I think, is also this lack of intuition and prioritizing this attempt to create predictability instead of actually tuning into your body's desires in any given moment. And this can happen in so many areas. And also maybe another bit of a little red flag would be this noticing a lack of emotional resilience and feeling really thrown by small unexpected things, because recovery really challenges you to work on, I guess, what I would call emotional agility, where you might feel really heightened by something, but then you're able to come back to a place of feeling a little bit more regulated, more efficiently than perhaps if you're in the depths of your eating disorder, or something small might happen and you might kind of get stuck in a state of disappointment or whatever it might be for like half of the week, a longer duration of time.
Yes. Yeah. I think definitely putting yourself in situations to test which part of you is in control, really, really important, especially things like social situations, right? Can you say yes to something spontaneously?
Yes.
Food involved, or even not food involved. These things, you know, don't just have to be attached to food. That, you know, rigidity then starts to seep into things that aren't even adjacent to food, you know, being an issue. So can you say yes to something? If somebody switches a restaurant on you, can you still go? If somebody orders for the group, can you eat everything that's ordered without being in your head and being, you know, going over the numbers and going over the planning and going over all the rules, et cetera? Do you then lose control over your connection to other people and your relationships and your friendships because the control over the food and the control over the body supersedes sort of those needs that you have that healthy self would be more in control of? Because this is the thing, is that there is always a price here, right? There is always, you're in control, you're being controlled in this way. Eating disorder self gets to have this control, and that is at the cost of, do you have control over how you move through your life? Are you able to be spontaneous? Do you even have connection to that intuition which tells you how you want to be spontaneous and what you want to do in that moment? So I think putting yourself in uncomfortable scenarios as it's relevant to your recovery progress. I'm not saying just go and throw yourself in the deep end if it really feels like that's not a safe place or time for you to be doing it. And obviously it can be helpful to do that with the guidance of somebody on your team. That's a lot of what we do. We're not just moving through people's fear foods. We're not just challenging rules in particular. We're also challenging things like, how are you approaching your life? How are you connected to the people around you? Are there barriers there? What are the rules behind the barriers? Let's challenge those too. So yeah, I think you'll find them if you seek out situations that you know are probably going to make you a bit uncomfortable. And if eating disorder is preventing you from doing the things that you have some pretty good clues are important to you, right? If it prevents you from being connected to those things, there's a good chance that you're probably not behind the steering wheel of those decisions.
Also, I think it's just useful to acknowledge as well that there needs to be some mindset shifts here as well, because if you have had your eating disorder for a long period of time, say like 10, 20 plus years, and you have always shown up in these ways, there's going to be that instant, like there's no space between just coming straight up with the controlled answer of I can't do that, or I couldn't be in that situation, or I won't be okay. So I think even before being able to challenge yourself to some of these things, you have to open yourself up to the idea of maybe I could do something differently. Maybe with support, I actually could show up differently. Maybe I could actually tolerate these emotions that I'm assuming are going to come up in any given scenario.
Yeah, beautifully put. So how do we, and by that I mean you and I, achieve balance of having healthy control measures and also being flexible during the ups and downs of life? What does that look like for you?
For me, it's very much having this holistic perspective on health and wholeness. And that means realizing that during different parts of your life, different aspects are going to have to be a priority, and then different levels of flexibility might be required. And also like different measures of healthy control might have to be put in place. Also being aware of your mental health history, and that looks like intentionally not engaging in environments or with a type of culture or people that you think that kind of environment could put you in a potentially vulnerable position. That is a measure of healthy control.
Completely. Yeah. I think that one of my greatest tests of this was I was recovered for a couple of years, and then I was diagnosed with stage 4 endometriosis, which you want to talk about being out of control of your body, right? Like it is an absolute gamble. It's not just when, you know, my period's arriving. It can be out of nowhere. It can be because I picked up a box and then the next day my entire nervous system is on fire. Or it could be just because I slept at a weird angle and suddenly everything gets disrupted, right? So it's that, what can I control in this sort of out of control of my body sense that I have, I can control how I take care of myself that day, right? It's kind of, I think body image is a really great demonstration of this, when you're recovered versus when you're in an eating disorder, which is that I still get bad body image days. I feel very alien in my body sometimes because of my chronic illness. I don't look at that and go, do you know what I'll do? I'll go on a diet. That'll make me feel in control. Cause I've been down that rabbit hole 8,000 times and that never worked. So the only control I have over that day or that sense of feeling alien in my body is, how do I take care of myself? How can I rest? How can I sort of soothe my body? What are things that I can do to make sure that I'm sort of riding out that bad body image day or that bad chronic illness day to get me to the next point of feeling more at peace with it, versus like that control is really such an overcorrection, right? It's kind of like when they say, I don't know if this is actually legit advice, so please don't take it for, you know, if you get in an accident. But what some people say is that when you get in an accident, instead of tensing up, that you should actually go limp, go floppy, so that your body is not rigid and therefore can't kind of take that impact in a way that's more likely to break bones or whatever, right? So instead of, when you're faced with adversity, instead of getting rigid and instead of trying to overcorrect and trying to control what you can, trying to go with the event as much as you can so that you can come out intact, right? So in terms of the control that I feel like that I feel like I have, so much of what you're saying, achieving balance by knowing what my needs are, knowing what work hours I need to work, not what I expect myself to do, right? Not saying yes to every social event, because sometimes that'll be really, really good for me. And sometimes I'll feel like I'm pushing myself to please and appease others, which is not good for me. It's so flexible. A microcosm of that is, you know, when you go to bed and you've just spent the whole night in the kitchen making dinner, it's a mess. You know, you rinse the pots, and one night my sense of control and taking care of myself will be, Mia, you've got an early start tomorrow. Wash up the pots. Don't leave it for Mia tomorrow morning. She's got enough on her plate. But another night it might be, oh no, just rinse them and leave them. You've got a late start tomorrow. Get yourself off to bed. That's what you need now. It's more rest. Get up. So it's flexible. It's not, I have these rules and I must shove myself into them no matter what. It's meeting your needs as they come up and knowing that those needs are going to change. And not only are they allowed to change, but in order for you to be in the safest possible place, they have to change. They have to be flexible. Your needs are not always going to be uniform. So the way you take care of yourself and how you treat yourself will not always be uniform.
Yes, that is spot on. Because I think a lot of these, you know, I think this healthy control is making aligned decisions that you know support you, in that come from a place that are value aligned, and you're also thinking about your future self. Like for me, that is very much like, Holly, floss your teeth. You need to think about your future self right now. And that doesn't mean that I'm actually not doing the thing that I want to do in the moment, which is just go to bed. Yes. Right. So it's like, it's actually being like putting yourself in this place of like intentional discomfort, doing the future thing. And obviously this is like every time you're challenging a food, if you have an eating disorder in your recovery, but for me currently it's flossing and this situation of doing that and making that decision, because I know that I'm going to feel better for it. It's the exact same thing with the pots for you. And I also love that. It's like, you'll have seasons where it's like, you're more work orientated and maybe you're working on a project and you want to have a little bit more like flexible discipline with that. And then some seasons you're like, it's summer, I'm kicking back. Like I'm surfing every day. I'm relaxing. And sometimes I might be more outward socially. And sometimes I'm like, whoa, in my cocoon and loving this, you will not hear from me. Yes. And also knowing that you are, like we were saying before, coming back to the idea that you're always changing and evolving as a being. And that's so important, because you're not always going to be in the same energetic state and have the same desires and it be in the same place and whatever it is all the time. So like, why would your life be so structured in a way that only supports this like one version of yourself? Because like realistically, I'm a different person than who I was last Wednesday. Yeah. I don't know who I'm going to be next Friday.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I love that referring to it as seasons of life, where sometimes taking care of yourself is, spending an hour in the kitchen and really, you know, making something beautiful. And then I have, like, at the moment, we've got the retreat coming up. I've got like 800 projects going on at once. If dinner takes longer than 20 minutes for me to cook, I'm not cooking it. It's not happening. And do I repeat a lot of the same dinners? Yes, because it is functional and it is, it's easy for me to do, and it accommodates all the things that are important to me at the moment. But that's this season of my life. So that's the need. Meet the need now. When the needs change, then what you do to cater to those needs changes as well.
Totally. I remember I used to be, and this was definitely something that probably happened when I had my eating disorder, but I'd always not always plan food in advance, but I'd also plan outfits. Like I'd be like, I know what I'm wearing tomorrow. I could never do that now because I don't know how I'm going to be tomorrow.
Yeah. What's she going to feel like? I certainly don't know, because I'm like, what pant size are we going to be today out of the four that I have to have available, depending on how distended she decides to be. But I've loved this. I think that we've had so many just practical things in here as well that we can start doing to maybe cause a little bit of that disruption to eating disorder control, and even seeking out like what are the edges of that control and where start maybe pushing back and implementing healthy self-control. But if there's any takeaway I want people to have, it's that you are not losing the comfort of that control and predictability when you go into recovery. We just transition it into a more sustainable and far less dangerous and costly sense of prediction and control in ways that are actually functionally able to not just give you the sense of those things, but can actually give you the thing itself, right? Control and predictability. We can find them, but you're never going to find a sustainable or cheap way of exerting control or feeling a sense of control if you're trying to get it from your eating disorder.
Absolutely. And I think just last little point there is like the biggest thing I've taken away from doing this work with control that has felt so powerful for me in my experience is that some of those weakest places in me as a child, like my inability to express emotions because of this work and doing this healing, are probably the strongest places in me now as an adult. So I think that in itself is so healing. So because of this work of recovery, of having to figure out why am I trying to control, what are these behaviors doing for me and why and how, and then figuring out, okay, now how can I step into my power as this sovereign being who has full autonomy for my decisions and complete trust in my ability to feel and experience and work with my emotional world, even when it might feel like, you know, your external world is crashing down. I know how to control my internal world, and I know how to care for me. And that in itself just gives you this deep sense of strength that I can and will keep moving forwards because I actually don't need the external things to hold me up.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Loved this. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Let us know in the comment section of the YouTube video, or you can give us feedback on Spotify. They have a nice little feedback box where you can send us little notes and messages. I've seen a couple of those. I will send those to you because they have been lovely. and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another one. Also, don't ever hesitate to get in touch and let us know what you'd like us to talk about or questions. We might even do like a Q&A podcast episode at some point. Just love doing this with you. Always, always.
Great.
That's my morning.
Thank you.